All this week, we're talking about how the new Trump administration will impact Illinois' economy. Today, President Trump's promise to bring back jobs and manufacturing across the country.
Washington flourished, but the people did not share in its wealth. Politicians prospered, but the jobs left and the factories closed.
How are you hoping to see Trump affect manufacturing here in Illinois? Tweet at 21STShow or call 1-800-222-9455. Plus, do you use the words pop or soda? We'll discuss why where you're from might determine what you call it. And
I don't need music, lobster, or
we'll talk with the founder of the Mark Morris Dance Group about their upcoming performance in Central Illinois and how he uses dance and live music to help people with Parkinson's. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned.
A cup of coffee, a sandwich, and you.
Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. During President Trump's first official week in office, we've been taking a look at how the new administration will affect our Illinois economy. Yesterday, we talked about trade and agriculture. Tomorrow, we'll be looking specifically at healthcare. Today, we wanted to focus on manufacturing. There are about 500,000 people in Illinois employed in manufacturing. That's according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. We know that those jobs have been declining, especially over the past year. Of course, we've heard so much from President Trump about how much he wants to bring those jobs back to America. But the question is, how many of those will be here in Illinois? How are you hoping the Trump administration will impact specifically manufacturing here in Illinois? You can tweet us. Our handle is 21STShow. You can give us a call, 1-800-222-9455, to share what you're looking for in the first 100 days. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by Chuck Sweeney. He's a senior editor at the Rockford Registered Star. But we wanted to start with State Representative John Cabello. He's a Republican. He represents the Rockford area in the State House, and he also chaired the Donald Trump campaign here in Illinois. Representative Cabello, thanks for joining us on the 21st. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, and please call me John.
What are you looking for with President Trump to do for manufacturing in Illinois?
Oh, I'm hoping that he's going to do some really good things, and I believe that he will. Obviously, we need to look at the types of regulations that we enact and put in on businesses. But also, we need to make sure that we make it a fair playing field for the businesses here in the United States to do business across the world. I think there's lots of businesses that are at a disadvantage just because of the different tariffs that we have. It's easy to import products to the United States and they pay less, but when we export our products to different countries around the world, our companies have to pay a lot more in the taxes over there. So I think making a level playing field is some of the good things that I see President Trump doing, along with restricting some of the regulations or rescinding some of the regulations that we put on business.
You know, Representative, when we're thinking about that, when you think about tariffs in particular, you know, you mentioned that. I was thinking about a report that was just released from the Center for Automotive Research about talking particularly about tariffs and also about NAFTA. And they estimated that they think any move by the U.S. to withdraw from NAFTA, of course, we've seen President Trump talking about that, or the idea of the implementation of punitive tariffs, they're saying that could result in a loss of at least 31,000 American automotive and parts jobs. I know when we think about Illinois in particular, I'm thinking about a lot of automotive suppliers who were based, particularly in the Chicago area, around your area in Rockford. How do you respond to that?
Well, I would like to see those numbers. When we talk about those types of numbers, we can find and skew numbers any which way that we would like. I would say the proof will be in the pudding once that pudding is made. And I think this is the President Trump's fifth day in office. I think we just need to let some of this play out and see what he's going to exactly do. When we see that, I think you will see that the industrial giant will awaken. And I don't see how that is really going to happen. We see Rockford used to be a huge manufacturing city, and we have seen all of those jobs go overseas. Why? Because it was cheaper to make and send over here. We've got to find a way, and I think President Trump will show us that way in reversing that trend to make sure that any American that wants a good-paying job, especially in manufacturing, will be able to find that good-paying job.
And I have a question for you in terms of certainly we've heard President Trump talk about how important it is to bring those jobs back. I don't know necessarily that it's especially important for him to bring those jobs back to Illinois, right? I think it's important for him, as he said, to bring them to back to the U.S. What do you think, as someone who, you know, was just in Washington for the inauguration, chaired the Trump campaign here in Illinois, obviously, what do you think other folks in Illinois, our elected officials in Washington, should be doing to ensure that those jobs end up here in our state?
Well, we've got to get our act together here in Illinois. Obviously, a company that is looking to expand is going to realize that we have some major issues here in this state. We've got to get our act together. We've got to get a budget. We've got to do some reforms to workman's comp. We've got to make this a business-friendly state. We are not a business-friendly state. So to be able to compete for those jobs that are going to be coming back, we've got a lot of work to do. And unfortunately, right now in Springfield, we're not even measuring our progress in inches and feet. We are at a stalemate. We've got to find a way to do our jobs in Springfield and make it easier for business to do what they do. Job as an elected official is not to create jobs. The job of an elected official is to create an environment for business to flourish. Once you have the businesses flourishing and wanting to come here, they will compete against each other to get the best employees that they can, which will then in return help the employees, because the employees will get better pay, because the companies are going to want to have the best employees. And one of the easiest ways to get the best employees is by paying them more.
I have a question for you about advanced manufacturing and different initiatives. President Obama talked a lot about that, about making sure that we are educating people. And I'm thinking in particular of the Digital Manufacturing University of Illinois lab that was put in Chicago during the past administration. Do you think that's an important part of investment? Would you like to see President Trump be talking about that as well? The idea that what we can do really well in America is advanced manufacturing, and that's something that Illinois can help lead?
That should definitely be part of the overall solution. Is it the only part? No. You know, we've lost a lot in this country. A neighbor of mine is a tool maker and is older than I am, and he tells me all the time that we have lost the craftsmanship in this country because of all of the jobs leaving. You know, it takes some time to perfect your craft, and we don't have the older generation teaching the younger generation about how to do manufacturing again. So we've lost a bit. I think we can recover from it. I think we've got to recover from it, because if we don't, we're going to be a service industry nation, and that's not good paying jobs. So I think that could be a part of the overall solution, but it's not just the only part.
John Cabello is a Republican. He represents Illinois' 68th District, parts of Rockford, the Rockford area. I know you're on your way to Springfield. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
We're joined, by the way, if you're listening and if you would like to share what you hope to see President Trump do to help rebuild manufacturing Illinois, you can tweet us, 21STShow. You can give us a call, 1-800-222-9455. Steve on Facebook said earlier, if President Trump is serious about the infrastructure is spending, Illinois could benefit from a matching jobs bill. You can join the conversation as well. Give us a call, 1-800-222-9455. We're joined now by Chuck Sweeney. He's a senior editor at the Rockford Register Star. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the 21st.
I'm happy to be here.
I know we were just talking to John Cabello. I know that you were just interviewing him as well in a story that you did looking at talking to manufacturers, seeing what they're hoping to get in the Rockford area from the Trump administration. How is manufacturing doing? We just heard the representative talking a little bit about that. What are you hearing from area manufacturers in the Rockford area about their hopes under a new Trump administration?
Well, I think our good representative, who I know well, was painting a little too dire of a picture. There's a lot of interesting manufacturing going on here in the aerospace sector. For instance, one of our companies has 64 gears on the Martian space rover that's wheeling around on Mars right now. That very precision stuff. I guess you were talking about high-tech manufacturing. A lot of that's going along around here, going on around here in smaller companies. But I've talked to quite a few manufacturers since this election, and they are optimistic. Of course, they're optimistic. One symbol is the stock market went up. But they just look at, you know, they're generally Republican businessmen, and they generally look at Republican administrations as more business-friendly, and particularly on some of the things that Trump, you have to get used to saying that, one of the things that Trump's pledged to do is to concentrate on building up American jobs and cutting regulations. The people I've talked to are all very enthused by that.
Right. And when I think about that, I think cutting regulations is an issue. We'd had a lot of conversation yesterday about trade and how that might affect manufacturers. We'll tweet out that link, by the way, as well. If you follow the 2NST show, you can see that. But to your point about advanced manufacturing, Chuck, how do you see that advanced manufacturing with new technologies playing a role in the future of the industry in Illinois? We know certainly for the past 8 years, it's something President Obama has spent a lot of time talking about. I mentioned the Digital Manufacturing Lab. That's something you hear a lot of officials in Illinois saying are an important thing for the state.
Well, we're building an infrastructure of training programs and procedures so that young people can get involved in that. Unfortunately, our public school systems decided in one of their brilliant brainstorms that America didn't need any manufacturing anymore, so we'll just dismantle all these shop classes we have. And that left us with the dearth of manufacturing people to come into the manufacturing
with a skill set.
Yeah, as John Cabela mentioned, you know, the people in those jobs are getting near retirement age, and we've got to have people coming in to replace them.
And to your point, do you see, and I'm thinking particularly in the Rockford area, the manufacturers you're talking to, do they feel that people have the skills needed? Are they looking for workers?
Many small manufacturers that I talk to are looking for workers. They're looking for workers who show up on time and who really are serious about it and have basic skills like math skills and things like that. And that's hard to find. There's jobs that aren't being filled. And, of course, the figure I've seen for manufacturing jobs nationally is there's like 5 million of 5 million people could be hired if they could find the people with the skills. So clearly, you know, I don't know what we did in this country to decide that we weren't going to train kids to work in factories anymore, but it didn't turn out to be one of the most brilliant things, I think.
Right. I'm speaking with Chuck Sweeney. He's a senior editor at the Rockford Register-Star. And Chuck, I'm thinking about the story that you just did when you talked to different manufacturers about sort of their hopes. And we've been talking about education. Is that sort of the number one thing you hear from businesses, that we really need to do a better job investing in our educational system and creating these math and science skills and creating a base for creating a workforce? Because it sounds like you're saying that's an even more important step than saying we need to bring these jobs back.
That's an important step. But mainly when I ask manufacturers, and this is for a long time I've asked them this, what would you like to see the government do? Leave me alone is what they say. So
and so in that sense, you're getting the sense that they feel like a Trump administration will do that from a regulatory perspective?
He said yesterday he was going to cut 75% of regulations, which is huge, to quote the Donald. Whether he'll be able to do that, I don't know. Whether that's advisable, I don't know. But business people generally get the feeling that he's going to create a more friendly environment to them. And, of course, that will tick off a whole lot of other people who like all those regulations. So I think we're in for a really interesting 4 years. But,
and Chuck, to that point, you know, I would just want to ask you, I mean, because we have been talking a lot about the Trump administration. One thing I was going to say, we did reach out. The Illinois Manufacturers Association was meant to join our conversation as well. Unfortunately, they had to cancel because of events in Springfield. They're pretty busy there. And I can't help but think about when we're talking about Springfield, how much workers' compensation you hear that those regulations at a state level being so important. So that's my last question for you, Chuck. Do you have a sense that the environment in Illinois and the state level is much more important than whatever happens at a federal level?
Well, I sure hear a lot about the dysfunction of Illinois government. And, you know, the reason that's most important is the fact that we don't have a budget and we don't have a stable, way to get to a future that's predictable. One of the reasons, I was talking to Governor Rauner last couple of weeks ago when he was here, and he told me that
creating that stable environment. Yeah, unfortunately, we're out of time, Chuck, but I'm sure creating that stable environment is what we hear from businesses all the time, something they're looking for.
Well, it would have got us the GE corporate headquarters in Chicago instead of Boston.
Chuck Sweeney is a senior editor at the Rockford Register Star. Chuck, thanks for joining us. You're listening to The 21st. Stay tuned. Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Every year, tens of thousands of people are hospitalized as a result of being prescribed multiple drugs, which individually wouldn't harm them, but in combination can be dangerous or even deadly. If you go to the pharmacy to fill a prescription for multiple medications, you might assume you'd be warned that that combination of drugs is dangerous, but a team of reporters at the Chicago Tribune found that not to be the case. In more than half of 255 pharmacies they tested in the state of Illinois, they reported that last month or today. Governor Rauner just announced plans to try to remedy this problem, a series of fixes. Ray Long is one of the Chicago Tribune reporters who was behind that investigation. He's on the line with us now from Chicago. Hey, Ray, welcome back to The 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Hello, Nyla. Good to be here. Thank you.
So, Ray, Illinois law already does require pharmacies to offer counseling to patients on their medication. I think all of us know when you go to pick up your medication, they say, do you want to talk to the pharmacist? Is that the extent of it? What would change under this new proposal?
Well, instead of just asking if you want to talk to the pharmacist, and a lot of times it'll be, do you have any questions or some other innocuous type ask of the customer. And instead of that, there will actually be counseling that the pharmacist will be required to do. Now, that won't be on every time you pick it up if you're doing refill after refill after refill. But if you get a new medication, or if you get a change of dose or some change of like when you take it, how many times you may take it a day, then the pharmacist will be required under Rauner's proposal to give counseling to the patient at the counter.
Now, Governor Rauner today was specifically reacting to your investigation, the Tribune reporting you all did. You all found 52% of pharmacies sold medications to reporters without mentioning potential dangerous drug interactions. So right now, the law is there's no law in Illinois to monitor this?
Well, they could be out there catching some, but they're not really paying the attention they should be. And what Rauner wants his inspectors to do is to go out and put more focus on this idea that adverse drug reactions are things that pharmacists should be checking. He also wants to put in place what he calls a mystery shopper program. That's when they send out anonymous buyers to check and see how well drugstores would perform. You kind of see that same kind of thing with underage drinking checks. They send out people to go to liquor stores and check and see if they'll sell to minors. This would be one that they'd be checking to see how well the pharmacy is following the rules.
Is that what you all did, Ray, with the Tribune? Did you guys essentially kind of run, maybe not mystery shoppers, but you had reporters go out, and that's how you guys figured this out?
Yes, it was similar. We went out, we gave our real names. We went to pharmacies. We kept a checklist of all the things that we'd be watching for, the time we went in, how long it took, whether the drugs would take a while to prepare. But what we did was we had five pairs of drugs. Each pair were known drug interactions. And we asked a doctor to write us the prescriptions, and we went to the pharmacies and tested them to see how they would do. The only thing that we didn't do that it would be, say, different from when you're actually doing general reporting is that you might go up and say, well, you would go up and say, I'm with the Tribune, and I've got questions. The thing we decided to do after studying many different ethics and legal hoops and areas to study, went in, we gave a real name and saw what they would do. And you really, if we had identified themselves, that could have raised a flag and wouldn't have gotten a proper test. Mm-hmm. We wanted it to be like the way it is when you go into the drugstore. Yeah, for every consumer.
Yeah. So important work by the Chicago Tribune. We're going to tweet out all of the investigations that you guys did if you followed 21st Show. Ray, what have pharmacy retailers said about this? Because your investigation found that CVS, for example, handles this different versus a Walgreens. What are the retailers saying now?
Right. Well, CVS, Walgreens, and Walmart all said that they'd take significant steps to improve their patient safety. CVS scored a 63% failure rate. Walgreens had a 30% failure rate. So CVS was on the side that had more fails, and Walgreens was the lowest score. Walmart was around 43%. And we did seven chains. And these big ones, CVS, Walgreens, and Walmart, all said that they do things ranging from training to checking their computer systems to see if they could develop a better way to check to alert to their pharmacists.
Well, and they all have apps now. Like, you'd think this would just be on the app, like a warning or something like that. And I wonder, I mean, do you, now that you've done this reporting from the work that you guys have done, do you think consumers, we should be asking more questions if we're filling multiple prescriptions? If you're worried about it, would you say now you think it's sort of incumbent on consumers to say, hey, do I need to be worried about these drugs that have been prescribed?
Well, I think that's right on the mark. If you're out there and you're getting drugs, you should make sure that your pharmacist knows all the ones you're taking, even if it's over the counter, because there can be different things that interact with drugs. Even grapefruit juice or grapefruits could react to certain drugs or dilute their power. So you have to be alert, really, to ask the pharmacist what this drug that you're buying may interact with, and in particular, tell them what you're taking so that they can help you determine whether what you're prescribed is safe.
And Ray, in terms of what Governor Rauner has proposed today, these would be changes, I believe, to the Illinois Pharmacy Act. Some people are saying this is a start, but it doesn't go far enough. What more can be done?
Right. One of the things that we found in our story looking into this is that many pharmacists feel overwhelmed. Their workload is just one prescription after another, to the point where they may do 200 or 300. Some say they do even 400 plus in one day, in one shift. And that's not giving much time for a drug review. So Mary Flowers, a state representative from Chicago, is a chairman of a committee that oversees health in the House, and she is trying to look at whether you could limit the number of hours that pharmacists spend on the job, because she fears that fatigue will lead to errors, and pharmacists have suggested that to us too.
Mm-hmm. So the politics of this, as you mentioned, one state lawmaker that's working on this. Do we have a sense what it would take to implement what Governor Rauner has proposed today?
Well, I think many of the things that he wants can be done in a obscure panel that oversees the fine print of the laws.
Of the act, of the Pharmacy Act.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Then you draw out rules, et cetera. And they could consider it and maybe get it through in a matter of months, maybe 6 months or so. But everything in Springfield is contingent upon everything else these days.
Well,
so
right.
Who knows if anything can happen, right?
That was right, Ray. That was my last question for you. We just have a minute or two left. But I know as someone who has covered, you're a veteran of covering Illinois politics, and particularly the State House in Springfield. What is going on there? What do we expect to see? I'm going to ask you a little more short term, apart from all of this that we're talking about. What do you expect to see happen this week, Ray?
Well, I think today the game plan is for Senate President John Kellerton and Christine Rodonio, the Republican leader, to come together and put a string of bills, as many as a dozen or more, up for votes. These are interlocked, basically. You can't sign one into law and leave another one hanging. And it requires tough votes. These are votes that they think that they can get people from their sides, different sides of the aisle, to come together and vote for, including an income tax increase, including some changes in a variety of other laws that really are anathema to the other side. So if there's a bill that Democrats don't like weakening workers' comp or something like that, they're going to need more Republican votes. If there is a bill to raise the minimum wage, they're going to need more Democratic votes. So they're doing what they call a structured roll call to try to get all these to pass. And then they're going to put it up through committee today, and they expect to put them up for votes in the full Senate tomorrow. The same day that Governor Rauner is doing his State of the State.
Right. Lots going on this week. Of course, we've got the State of the State tomorrow. Thanks to Ray Long, a veteran Chicago Tribune reporter, one of the reporters behind this investigation about prescription drugs and drug interactions. Ray, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Nyla. Good to be here.
One of those things proposed, a tax on sugary drinks for Illinois. It would raise an estimated $500 million in revenue, includes both juices and carbonated beverages, which in Illinois are better known as pop or soda pop, or have you ever heard sody? If we're going to have a tax on this beverage, we might as well know what we should call it. So we thought we'd invite an expert to join us and get it all straightened out for us. Alan Metcalf is the author of How We Talk, American Regional English. He's also an English professor at McMurray College in Jacksonville, Illinois. Alan, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome. It's happy to be here.
I wonder if you can help us understand, how is Illinois divided on the soda versus pop question? Different people say different things depending on what part of the state they're from, right?
Right. I grew up in Chicago, and I said pop, and that seemed like the normal thing. But there have been some surveys recently where there's some beautiful maps showing that it's a more complicated situation. And amidst the pop, which is basically in northern Illinois, along the corridor of I-55, I don't know how it comes to be that way, it seems to be more soda. And then when you get to further south, St. Louis is a big splotch of soda. And soda can also be sody, but depending on what it is. Otherwise, it's pop throughout the northern part of the country, starting at the west end of Pennsylvania, going through Ohio, northern Indiana, Michigan, Iowa, Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, way out in the Pacific coast even, at least in Seattle.
Oh, so.
But then you.
Okay, so no, wait, that's. Is, sorry, is that soda or that's pop? That's the more widespread one.
That was pop.
Pop, okay.
But as for soda, on those maps, you see that California is just awash in soda, if not in floodwaters. And then the entire northeastern U.S. is very much soda. And then in the old South, the deep South, from Texas to Tennessee and Mississippi and Alabama, they call it a Coke.
Right. And I was like, I'm from Florida, and I think that's our southern vestige, is that I grew up calling everything Coke. Even if it's Sprite
right.
or a Pepsi, you say, can I have a Coke? And they say, is Pepsi okay? Or do you want ginger ale?
Right.
Or so I think it, but you said something interesting that I've never heard before. And you said this is in the St. Louis area. Did you say sody? People, where did, how, that is a new one for me. How did that come about?
Some people just, I wish I knew the answer to that one. I live in Jacksonville, 30 miles west of Springfield and 80 miles north of St. Louis. And by and large, people say soda here, though some of them say sody, and exactly how that distribution goes, I don't know, because the maps don't show that little distinction.
Well,
but
and
they
it's,
sure show that
yeah,
it's St.
An,
Louis.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, Alan, because I think that people get very attached. It's an interesting thing, and I'm curious your thoughts as someone who studies this. We do get sometimes adamant about what we think the correct word is, or we feel really strongly about the words that we use when it's something like soda or soda pop. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's actually with the different words for soda, it's something that this is so naturally to you when you're growing up that you're astonished that people say it differently sometimes. I should mention, by the way, that Milwaukee, for some reason, is a little,
they just say beer, right?
Yeah, but when they do drink a soda in Milwaukee, it's a soda for some reason and not pop. But if you're from a soda region and hear somebody saying pop, that seems just sort of puzzling and nonsensical. And if you're from a pop region and somebody says soda, well, again, that seems funny. And then to both the soda and the pop people, when they hear people in the South saying Coke, but not meaning Coke.
Right. I guess it is a little confusing.
After all, the headquarters of Coca-Cola is in Atlanta.
Sure.
I think,
but mm-hmm. Yeah, which is why I think that sort of, that has spread throughout all of the South. So how do you suggest, as an expert, how do you suggest we settle this question? And I noticed we were actually parsing through different ways public radio reporters have said this, and we noticed in pieces about the sugary beverage drink tax, people said soda pop and then soda pop. So they used all three. Would you suggest we just all start using each other's words for this?
I suppose so, but it doesn't. It seems it's more fun if we use our own words, and then that leads to a little bit of exchange of perspective. It kind of reminds me that I taught long ago for a semester at Texas A&M University in College Station, and I started calling my students "you guys," and they all looked at me very strangely. I learned to say "y'all."
Y'all.
And I came back the next semester and said to my students in Illinois, now I want you all to do this. And they looked at me strangely. So it's a kind of way of reminding yourself that you're in a little different territory here and you might adapt to the native way of doing it.
That's a good point. I had to drop y'all from my language when I moved here. Thanks to Alan Metcalf. He's the author of How We Talk, American Regional English. He also teaches at McMurray College in Jacksonville. Thanks, Alan.
You're welcome.
I don't need music, lobster, or wine. Whenever your eyes gaze into mine, the things I long for are simple.
You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo, and that's music from the Mark Morris Dance Group's performance of the ensemble piece Dancing Honeymoon. The dance company is known for their live and lively music performances and the way they bring together dances and styles of both music and dance from across the world. This week, they're coming to Central Illinois. They're going to be performing at 7:30 Friday and Saturday night at the Krannert Center for Performing Arts in Urbana. They're also going to be hosting several events on Friday and Saturday open to the community for people young and old to get you up on your feet and dance to live music yourself. We're going to tweet out all that information if you follow us on Twitter, 2NST Show. It'll also be up at our website. I'm joined now by the founder of the dance group, Mark Morris, on the line with me from New York. Mark, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you.
I was watching a portion of the Dancing Honeymoon online. It's in the lineup for the shows this week. That's some of the music we just played. It's really whimsical. Mm-hmm. I think you can get the sense of sort of that pop style 20s and 30s soundtrack. What's the idea behind that ensemble?
Music. Everything I do, every single piece I make up is devoted to and based on music. So this was a suite of songs from the period 20s and 30s, as recorded originally by the great performers Jack Buchanan and Gertrude Lawrence. And I liked the very, very small segments, and they flashed through, I don't know, maybe 15 numbers from the period and linked together. And I like the storytelling, and of course the style is incredible. That period of jazz, as we would call it, is spectacular, and the wonderful, clever lyrics, and it's complicated, very quick stories. That's what I like.
So to give people a sense of it, and again, we'll tweet out the video so everyone can see it, but really lovely, colorful costumes. There's a really nice yellow theme of mm-hmm. all of the costumes in Dancing Honeymoon. Very simple set. It's just chairs and dancers, and then, of course, the music. As you're going through that process, how do you start? Do you start with the music first, and then does everything come from there?
Always from music. But the other thing is, a tiny suggestion of a dance on the medium that we call YouTube is valuable in the way that, saying how are you to somebody is valuable. You don't really want to know the answer. So that's a tiny, tiny peek at a dance. And of course, I want that sort of publicity to make people come to the show, because of course, everything is realized in a performance that you can't replace real people with anything. So I want a live audience and live performers.
And in this live performance, Mark,
get people to come.
Yeah, yes. You're actually going to be singing live during the show. Is this correct? You're going to be doing that for the first time ever?
Well, I'm doing the vocal part, yes. I'm in the pit with the orchestra, with the band, yes. So I'm singing it.
And why is it important for
you? Don't worry.
What's that? Sorry, what was that?
Don't worry, I'm fine. You can trust me. I can sing perfectly well.
Why is it important for you that the music is all live as well, along with the dancing?
Well, my counter question is, why should it not? Why would it not be? That's the question. Why do you want to go? If I want to see a play, I want to see a play. If I want to listen to a recording or see a film, or read a book, that's great. Those things you can do on your own. Those things you don't need a theater. You don't need people to be there at the same time as you. So the living event, to me, is the absolute event. You wouldn't, karaoke is interesting, but I would rather have people who do it really well do it. So I want, as I said, everybody to be alive, the audience and all of the performers, instead of, 50% of them.
We're speaking with Mark Morris. He's the founder of the Mark Morris Dance Group. And Mark, this season's program also includes the solo dance serenade. It's a role that you created, you set to guitar and the percussion music of your longtime friend, the late Lou Harrison. What can the audience expect to experience from that piece?
Well, an audience can expect to experience whatever they're capable of paying attention to. That, you don't know, you should never know what you're going to see when you go to the theater or read a book for that matter. So, if you show up and trust that people are doing their job very well, you'll get something out of it. The piece is a very gorgeous piece. It's very late in his life. He died a decade or so ago. And it's for guitar, percussion, and one dancer. And I did used to do the part. And there's also the dancer plays their castanets in the part, and they play finger cymbals. And so it's music based on music from many places in the world, Turkish music and Indonesian music. It's a very, very subtle, quiet, beautiful dance for one person. So see it.
And there's also another work on the bill is Pure Dance Items. I know it made its world premiere last fall at the Lincoln Center in New York. It's only been performed there. That was created for a festival you curated on South Indian dance. Can you tell us more about Pure Dance Items?
Well, I did curate a small festival within the White Light Festival at Lincoln Center on called Sounds of India, which is primarily South Indian music and dance. And my company performed in that as the only non-Indian attraction performing on that. So I made up a dance specifically for that to string quartet music of the great American composer Terry Riley, who had many, many years of serious training in classical Indian music. So it ties to Indian music in some of the sonorities and some of the arrangements and the incredible rhythms, but it's for a Western string quartet and my guests. So we haven't done it anywhere but that festival. So it's still wet, that dance, very new one.
And how do you choose all of these different, how do you decide what you're going to put together into a program? As you're thinking about, as we're hearing all of these different, you know, we've heard Indonesia, we were just talking about South Indian, we started by hearing American jazz from the 20s and 30s. How do you decide what fits?
Well, that's it. You know, I'm fully an American artist. And I live in a big world of music and dancing. So, you know, actually a problem in performing at Cranert is that we come there all the time, which is a wonderful problem to have. We've been dancing there for 18 years, I think. So for us to have a program that isn't repeating everything takes some work, and that's the kind of work I love. So, we are very often co-commissioned when we put on a big piece. The Cranert Center is a big part of that, of producing it. So you get all of our big stuff, and then occasionally a repertory show like this, which is all the latest, most of the latest things that I've been working on. And, I like to make a mix of appeals in the show so that everybody has something to like. I hope everybody likes everything. But there's a lot of variety in the music and in the dancing and in my wonderful company.
And there's a couple community engagement events your company's going to be hosting this week for people young and old, and we're going to learn about more about that in a minute. But, Mark, why is it important to you to make opening up dance to all people of all abilities, as you say that on your website? Why is that a priority for the Mark Morris Dance Group?
Well, first of all, like I said about live music, it's like, well, of course it has to be. There have to be people. And so to... You know, one selfish reason to teach dancing and music to people where we visit on tour is so that they'll watch our show, so that there are people who are exposed to dancing with music, not just in the early age, although that certainly helps, but to the arts in general, so that, you know, you can't decide what you like and don't like until you've had some exposure to it. You know, nobody hates spinach. But you don't hate spinach until you've tasted it and get to decide that. So that's true of all of the arts. Reading seems to be lost as an art because people use it for so many other things, but it's a very fundamental one. So literacy, dancing, music, thinking, and participating with other people in the world, I think, is a very, very important and fascinating and good thing for people to do. So that's it. And also, there isn't a lot of arts education, let's face it, in schools, and a lot of people don't have much access to it. So whatever we can do to encourage more of that, we do, and we're good at it because we teach all the time. So, you know, we're very good at it, and it's welcoming and fun and friendly.
I'm speaking with Mark Norris. He's the founder of the Mark Norris Dance Group. They're going to be coming to Urbana to perform this weekend at the Cranert Center for the Performing Arts. And as Mark mentioned, they've been coming to Cranert for some time. So I wanted to bring someone else into this conversation from Cranert. Bridget Lee Kalfas is the Advertising and Publicity Director. Hi, Bridget. Welcome
Hi.
To the
Welcome
Hi, Mark. 21st. Thanks for being here.
So glad to be here.
And Bridget, one of the events that are from this weekend, in addition to the performances in the evening during the day, there's going to be a free high energy fitness class. It's part of this annual residency. Mark was just telling us about What's this fitness class going to be about?
Yeah, we've done this Get Fit program the last couple of years that the Mark Morris Dance Group has been with us in residency. It's a program that they had already established in New York and other places, and we were able to offer it. And it was so popular the last 2 years, we realized we needed to expand it this year to a second classroom space to really be able to accommodate as many people as possible. So this year on Saturday at 11 a.m., we'll be running two sessions concurrently. One we're calling Family Fun, Dance with Mark Morris Dance Group, and the other is the Get Fit. We envision the Family Fun is really an intergenerational experience, a little bit more of a beginner level. And then the Get Fit experience is a little more high energy, a little more intricate choreography. Both of those, of course, will have live music accompaniment to them, which is, of course, a hallmark of this company. And they're free to the public. They're down on level 2 in Krannert Center, which is our stage level. So come and participate on Saturday morning. We would love to have a great, robust crowd for both of those.
And I wanted to ask you about another program, Dance for People with Parkinson's. Mm. What's the idea behind that, Bridget?
Well, this is another hallmark of the Mark Morris Dance Group. Mark and the company founded a dance for Parkinson's many years ago in New York. And when they would come and have residency with us, we would organize a similar event. And it was so popular, and we saw how deep the need was in our community that we actually had some teachers go out to New York and become trained in facilitating these classes. And now it's something we offer every month, usually on the third or fourth Friday of the month. It's a free program. Anyone who has Parkinson's or another mobility disorder and their supporters are welcome to come and join us. It is one of my absolute favorite things we do all year long. The impact is so evident, and we're really particularly fortunate this month to have Mark and the company attend these performances. His instructors will be part of that class this month.
Mark, what's it like for you to attend those performances? I'm just curious, you know, we were talking before about how it's really important for you to have the live part of this be the people who are in the audience. And I wonder in particular, when you're doing these programs for people with Parkinson's, what is it like for you to experience that?
Well, first of all, I stay away, because if you go to the dance for PD program classes, you have to do it. So when I've been there to meet everybody and look at it and see what they're doing, because it's based on my work, of course, then you have to do it. You have to join in, which is, of course, fabulous. And they've been doing it for a long time. So we founded this thing. It's become a worldwide amazing magnet. And it's like, it's not magic, but it's a wonderful, fabulous thing to get people with Parkinson's disease active and out of their apartments, you know, and in public and with other people who have similar concerns. So it's really, it's very moving and very, in both senses of the word moving. And it's a music and dance experience that I've worked with for many, many years. And it's basically an operation of its own. It's like a huge and wonderful sort of global experience. So, and it happens individually all the time in many, many places in the world with individual people who are participating in it. It's a wonderful gift, really.
Bridget, all of these events are free?
Yeah, the Dance for People with Parkinson's and the two Get Fit classes are both free. And of course, we still have tickets available for the Friday and Saturday performances of the wonderful repertoire program that you talked about earlier.
That's Bridget Lee Kalfas with the Krannert Center for Performing Arts. I want to thank Mark Morris as well, who's founder of the Mark Morris Dance Group. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Bridget.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
Now, of course, it's not, as Mark said, the live performance, but I thought we could end by listening to another portion of the music from Dancing Honeymoon. That's one of the dances that are going to be performed this Friday and Saturday night at the Krannert Center.
I'll sow it in a line with where I've sown my wild oats. I'm awfully mad on wild thyme, and I want you to like it.
That was Dancing Honeymoon. Again, you can see that Friday and Saturday evening at the Krannert Center for Performing Arts. We'll have all the information about that as well as those other free events we were talking about at our website at 21stshow.org. If you follow us on Twitter, by the way, search for 21ST Show. We live tweet during the show with more analysis and background. On our Facebook page, if you search for the 21st to like us, you can comment on what we're working on, post questions or comments you want us to ask on air. Tomorrow, we are going to be continuing our week-long series on the new Trump administration, its effect on Illinois' economy. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about health care. That does it for us today. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.